Vishvaraha. O respectful one, a wife is so helpful that she is called the better half of a man's body because of her sharing in all auspicious activities. A man can move without anxiety, entrusting all responsibilities to his wife. Purport. By the Vedic injunction, the wife is accepted as the better half of a man's body because she is supposed to be responsible for discharging half of the duties of the husband. A family man has a responsibility to perform five kinds of sacrifices called pancha yagya in order to get relief from all kinds of unavoidable sinful reaction incurred in the course of his affairs. When a man becomes qualitatively like the cats and dogs, he forgets his duties in cultivating spiritual values, and thus he accepts his wife as a sense gratificatory agency. When the wife is accepted as a sense gratificatory agency, personal beauty is the main consideration, and as soon as there is a break in personal sense gratification, there is disruption or divorce. But when husband and wife aim at spiritual advancement by mutual cooperation, there is no consideration of personal beauty or the disruption of so-called love. In the material world, there is no question of love. Marriage is actually a duty performed in mutual cooperation as directed in the authoritative scriptures for spiritual advancement. Therefore, marriage is essential in order to avoid the life of cats and dogs who are not meant for spiritual enlightenment. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha Vandeham Shiguro Shiataf Parakamalam Shigurunda Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Purjana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivashakan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. After last night's charming discussion of Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're now taking another facet of Krishna conscious discussion, more concerned with our practical life at the present time. Our aim is to go back home, back to Godhead, and live with and serve Krishna and Balaram and all the residents of Vrindavan. Meanwhile, we're here. And Vyasadeva has very kindly, in his topmost contribution, or his only contribution which has any real value, the whole book taken together, has kindly, even in this, inserted some sections which give guidance how to live in this world so as to get out of this world and go to the real world. And Srila Prabhupada, more than any other acharya, has commented on social issues relevant to Varnashram society and particularly to Vaishnav society as it tries to, as the Vaishnavs try to establish Vaishnav society in a climate, social climate, more inhospitable than any other previously that Vaishnavs, at least in this Kali Yuga, have operated in. Of course, there were many political and resultant social difficulties during the periods of Muslim persecution in India. But there wasn't the same degraded social climate. It was a very turbulent situation. But it wasn't disturbed in this way, in which we have more or less peaceful society in the Western world. Of course, in this area, a few years ago, there was out-and-out war. But so far in the Western world, for the last few years, 50 years or more, they've maintained a peaceful situation. That is superficially, because they're slaughtering so many animals and people's minds are not at all peaceful. But at least there's not gross war in most of the Western countries. They're not in the country. They go somewhere else and do their fighting somewhere else, but they're not fighting at home in wars. And so the society is very peaceful, and it might have been hoped that in a peaceful situation there would be advancement of civilization, which there has been in one sense, in a technological sense, which in the spiritual sense, or in the sense of the Krishna conscious sense, is not advancement at all, actually. But in terms of social values of actual human civilization, what to speak of spiritual values, it's down, down, down. Going down. And you can see this now in Croatia. Freed from the communist rule, people are now free to pursue whatever they want. That's the myth anyway. But generally the society is going down and down and down. And here's a good example. Prabhupada, in this purport, speaks of divorce. Whereas, which I decided to speak on this because, on this topic, because I'm informed that there is a spate of divorces among our devotees in Croatia, which isn't very good. It should be addressed, this topic. Whereas, just a few years ago, maximum two generations ago, then there was no. There was no question, it didn't even come into the mind of our beef-eating and wine-drinking grandparents. They were degraded in many ways, and we've accepted a higher culture and a higher way of life, and we're very grateful to Srila Prabhupada for having given us that. But we're caught up in modern life, which in many ways is more degraded even than our forefathers who didn't have any clear idea of spiritual advancement. An interesting example I just encountered recently in India, which in India the old culture, which was so conservative and very careful in this regard, is changing so much. I just was reading Shruti Kirti Prabhu. Prabhupada was telling him that in our childhood, when we were young men, there was no question of walking up to a young woman. The attraction was there, but you're not even allowed to look. That's socially reprehensible. We didn't even think of looking at them. It was so strict a culture. So of course they say, well, that's too repressive, and you should allow people to be natural and enjoy, and the result is, abortion's a good business in India, because it's still socially reprehensible to have children outside of marriage, but there's no safety arrangements that children don't get begotten outside of marriage, so abortion. Yeah, I was going to say an example of how this, the old and the new, was brought graphically to me when I was sitting outside under the peepal tree at ISKCON Baroda, and one younger than me, lady who I've known for many years. Not very well, I've seen her here and there. She came up to me with her daughter and told me that she divorced her husband. I asked, "Where's your husband?" He said, I divorced him. And I said, "Well, why?" And said, "Well, he had some accident, and then after that he went crazy and he was violent and he was threatening to kill me, and I couldn't tolerate it anymore." And then another little bit older married lady came up, and I was saying to her, "This is not good. You know, you should see he's having difficulty. You should think how to help him instead of just leaving him. That's not dharma." Then this other lady came up, I said to her that to the one who came up, she was joining in the discussion. I said, because I know her also. I said, "You've also had so many troubles in your family life." I said, "Yes, you know as well as I do." But she said, the thought of divorce never even comes in the mind. That's the difference of culture. One was brought up in a village in India before TV came. And the other was brought up in, although Indian, was brought up in Hong Kong. So there's a difference in culture. And there's a difference in culture between old Croatia, Bosnia, and all the rest of Europe, and the modern. Even in Bosnia now, we see it's more conservative in many ways than Croatia, in social terms. That's probably almost certainly due to the influence of Islam, which is very conservative. Now, why are we talking about all these things? Is this a class on sociology or what? Well, yeah, it is, to some extent, because it's all part of Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada has taken up these issues, and they do affect us very much. So we should consider this. What Prabhupada is, he's giving some guidelines here. Because if our devotees can't live as the most ordinary thing, husband and wife, then what preaching are we going to do? We're talking about higher reality and how you chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But in the meantime, you can't even live a peaceful family life, which many meat-eating, wine-drinking, etc., karmis, they're happy. I mean, of course, there's no happiness in this material world, but what is meant by a happy family life is that at least they stick it out, they live it out, and they're not overly disturbed. I mean, some couples fight, some don't fight. Some couples are very close to each other throughout their lives, and some they live together but they hardly talk with each other, but they don't have anything against you. There's all kinds of combinations. But the point is that the combination should stay combined, not be a decombined. Otherwise, naturally, people say, "What do we have to offer to the world?" One reason the Mormons has for the last so many years been the fastest growing religion in the world is because they have strong family values, and they all help each other socially, and they're very strong on the point that families have to stay together, and they do stay together. So, of course, that's a mundane religion. People look to see what material benefits you get. And in Krishna consciousness, we have this difficult dichotomy that on one hand, we understand that material attachment is the cause of bondage. And on the other hand, it's recommended that most people get married. In fact, in one purport, Prabhupada says that everyone should get married. Especially all women should get married. That means, if it says everyone should get married, especially all women, it means that maybe the men need not get married, but definitely the women have to get married. It said they should be married by force, men by 25 latest and women by 16. So, married, then they, on one hand, the man is thinking, and the woman is also thinking, that, well, this is all temporary, reading every day, this is all temporary. Our real attachment is to Krishna. And on the other hand, there's family duty, responsibility, looking after children, who, if not brought up in a loving, stable, secure environment, become non-loving, envious, mentally instable, and just total dangers or disturbances to human society. And there's so many children are like that nowadays, that many parts of the major cities of the world, they're just not safe places to go. Even, I think, 20 years ago, I read in Back to Godhead something that you'd have to be crazy to go to Central Park in New York after alone, especially late in the evening. You just have to be crazy, that's all, because your chances of coming out without being assaulted are very low. It's just, there's all kinds of ghostly people wandering around who they see other persons as creatures to attack and extort money from for their drugs, mostly for drugs and alcohol and all this. So there's huge populations of disturbed people being produced, and even the so-called respectable people, so many of them, they have a nice shirt and a nice suit and a nice smile on the outside, but inside they're crazy. And it comes out time to time, and then people are surprised. So this, as Prabhupada has many times emphasized, this production of good children is such an important responsibility. Householders, they shouldn't think that they have any less responsibility than sannyasis or brahmacharis. It may not be on such a direct preaching or renunciation, but to bring forth good children in this world is at least as difficult and important a service as the sannyasis have to perform, especially in the modern age. As one disciple was saying to me recently, it was a little shocking to me, but it was true, actually, that I'm bringing up my child, but you can't, in the modern society, you can't say what the future will be. You know, it could be a homosexual or anything. Well, you never know. It's such a bad society, such bad association, that even children are, you may try your best to bring them up nicely, but they may fall to that bad association in course of time. Although generally we see that, actually in almost all cases, that parents who are just to each other and who, even if they disagree with each other, don't do so in front of the children, and to provide a stable, secure, and Krishna-conscious environment for their children, then their children, in most cases, they'll grow up as devotees and what we might call stable people. The broader environment, of course, is also very important, just like we're seeing now many, many children of devotees in India who are coming to their teens and beyond, and they're brought up as devotees, and of course in India the whole environment is much more supportive to Krishna consciousness, even though there's complete opportunity to fall down in almost every way as in the West nowadays in India, but because there are many devotees, and because they all come together and they see all different children. Just like here, you have little children, and gradually they're going to become bigger children, and then they're going to become teenagers, and then they're going to have their children also, married and children. So because they grew up seeing so many other children like themselves, who are children of devotees, and they're quite able to accept that. So we see many in India now, many devotees, children who are growing up and getting initiated and going on with the next generation, like making the next generation. So that environment is also very important, which is one of the many reasons why Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Vaishnav communities, where devotees can live together and they're not constantly in the association of non-devotees, which is what happens if we don't have our own communities, or devotees don't live together, then they have to fall back on the economic system offered by the broader society, which sucks up our physical energy, our time, and gives us bad association. So it's very, very difficult to maintain good consciousness in such a situation. And therefore we see, or therefore maybe that's a bit of a too much of a logical jump, but it's definitely one of a major cause in so many devotees. We're talking about the spate of divorces. A major factor in that is that devotees are at least economically taking shelter of a society which is demoniac, and which considers, probably in Croatia, not yet, but it's coming to be like that, considers divorce just a normal and socially acceptable thing. And I think probably in Croatia it's still not thought very good in general, is it? What do you think, Doctor? You see so many people. You're in a country area. Yeah, you're in a country area where people tend to be, all over the world, people tend to be more conservative out of the big cities. Yeah, please. Enketa?
Sarajevo. On this opinion, this practice, and 70% people said when a man and a woman marry, they should stay till the end together.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how many of those people who gave that opinion will do so. Let's see. Because even sometimes people believe it in principle, but then they find in their own life it's tough going, and then they tend to lose their principles, because the basic principle of life in modern society, Prabhupada's pointed it out here, is sense gratification and not responsibility. So although people think, yeah, it's good, they should do that, but when faced with the difficulties themselves, which they inevitably will do in a society that is based on sense gratification rather than responsibility, then that's the test. Do they really believe it, or is it just that hypocritical approach that everyone else should do it, but not me? So, and so many times people come to me and say, well, this is a special case. Everyone's a special case. Is, you know, well, you don't realize how bad it, you know, it's really, yeah, it's really bad. I agree, it's really bad. They're all really bad. In most cases, people don't divorce because, well, Prabhupada says sometimes they have a slight disagreement. It's come to that, but usually there's some clause in the court, they say, what is it, irreparable or incompatible or something, some word they use, something like that, I can't remember. So it's some irreparable breakdown of relationship. It's not irreparable, it's just, you know, he leaves his dirty socks in the middle of the floor and then she screams at him and she, you know, and it goes on like that. You know, it's not such a big thing most of the time. But it becomes a big thing because, you know, then she gets irritated, he irritates her, and then he calls her bad names, and then she calls him, and, you know, and it goes on and on and on and on. And ends up with, you know, hitting each other and scratching and all kinds of things. Here's so many cases of men assaulting their wives, and there's cases of wives assaulting their husbands also. I've seen it. I've seen a wife punching her husband. So it's not always one way. It's just that the men, they don't like to admit it, that's all. So... when the aim of life is sense gratification, then divorce will be allowed, and it will happen. Because the whole aim of life is to enjoy the senses. Everyone's fully dedicated to that. And sense gratification doesn't bring any happiness. And then you blame it on everyone else, especially those that are closest to you. And they blame you. And you're finding it's miserable, and you don't have any... Your sense of duty is not there, there's just the sense of sense gratification. And then you think, wow, this woman's terrible, this man's terrible. That woman I'm working with in my office, she seems much better than my wife. How did I marry her? So I'm going to chuck this one and pick up the nice, beautiful secretary in my office. Then you marry her, and then you find, well, unlucky twice in a row. Okay, let's try a third time. And it goes on. So, Prabhupada mentioned the sense of duty. It's a different outlook on life altogether than that of the sense gratificatory society. That sense of duty comes from understanding that we have a higher purpose in life. That's why marriage is a religious ceremony. It's a religious sacrament. It's said in the Catholic religion. It's called a sacrament. It's not just a civil contract. You can sign a civil contract that I am purchasing this land, I'm paying you $50,000 now, and I'll pay you another $50,000 in 3 months, and that's it. It's a contract. And you... But marriage in every culture of the world is a religious sacrament. That means it's not just the coming together of a man and a woman, but there's a higher principle involved. That it's being done for the sake of religion, for the sake of God. It's considered sacred in the eyes of God. So, but that sense in the atheistic sense gratificatory society, that isn't there. Often people like to marriage in a church because they consider it romantic and sentimental. And that's maybe the only time in their life they go to a church. But otherwise, they have no... they play the organ and the woman wears a long white dress and it all looks very romantic. But they don't have any sense of commitment. That the religious commitment that we are joined here together in the eyes of God. Because they don't have any sense of God. So when the aim of life is sense gratification, then divorce is, if not inevitable, it's pretty high chances, because there's no higher principle and there's no actual... What one marries for, if one marries not out of a sense of duty, he marries for a sense of sense, for sense gratification, well, there's no happiness in that, which one finds out pretty soon. And then you're just left with frustration. And as Prabhupada said, then why bother to maintain a wife? It's just like, why bother to maintain a cow if milk is available in the market? So Prabhupada used that example. That why bother to maintain a cow is very difficult. You better just buy the milk. Let someone else maintain the cow. So the same way, why bother to maintain a wife or a husband if you can get sex here, there, and everywhere? And as far as maintain, let the government maintain. The government is maintaining unmarried mothers because they thought, well, it's very bad for the children, no one's looking after them. And then once the economic problem was solved, then so many women decided, well, I don't need a husband, government will look after. So... The persons who are married and working, they're paying their taxes to look after those who are gallivanting around. The enjoying different women and making more babies. So the sense of duty, responsibility, understanding that to reject a wife who is, or for a wife to leave a husband who is fulfilling their duty or is not sinful or fallen, that is itself a sin. But people have no concept of sin. They live for sense gratification. And our devotees are subjected to that atmosphere also. And by association with non-devotees, then they're working and they're mixing up with different people, and they take that association and then they become weak. Some householder devotees are very strong and they're fixed and they've been brought up in a culture which supports the fidelity in marriage, responsibility in marriage. But for those devotees who haven't been brought up in such a culture and who are themselves, they don't have that cultural background, and then themselves they're weak spiritually. They're getting married because they're weak. They're not getting married because they're a rishi and they want to produce good children for the benefit of the human race. But they're already weak, and then without support from a broader community, they're mixing up with non-devotees, or they're mixing up with devotees who are preaching to them that, well, you know, you can't follow all these things and don't be fanatical, and this kind of preaching encouraging sense gratification. Then naturally they become weaker and weaker, and then they in the beginning their sense of discrimination and purpose and duty is not strong, and that whatever little they have, which you're supposed to have by hearing the Bhagavatam and associating with devotees and taking to Krishna consciousness, that also becomes whatever little sense of right and wrong one has becomes distorted by association with non-devotees and by so-called devotees who encourage not following regulative principles and not maintaining a responsible family life. So by that association, whatever little resolve they might have becomes weakened. And then why won't there be divorce? It's practically inevitable. And especially if that atmosphere is created. One godbrother was telling me recently, he was shocked after so many years of marriage, his wife suddenly decided to divorce him without any real reason. She herself couldn't give any real reason. She just said, well, I don't want to be married to you anymore. And it was also due to her bad association with certain women who were preaching to her like that. Somehow she got in that bad association. One had been through three husbands or something, and just envious because she didn't want to see anyone else happy. So they'd had a very settled marriage for so many years, and then he was in a large devotee community, and he said to the town president, "Hey, you should speak something. You should speak something to them." And she's working in your school. How can you allow a woman who does like this to teach the children? And well, you know, it's just normal. Just get used to it, that's all. No attempt to uphold religious principles. It's just, so many. And when there's such an atmosphere, it becomes so easy to do the wrong thing. So this, actually, the Vaishnav community is meant to be what is nowadays called strict. I hear many people call me strict. It's a joke. I'm not at all strict. We don't even know what strict means. I'm just trying to follow a few basic things which Prabhupada, in his lenience, gave to us. Prabhupada is very liberal to us, and you know, if you just follow the basic things that Prabhupada follows, very strict. Prabhupada himself said, "I'm 80% more lenient than my Guru Maharaj," and he was liberal compared to the atmosphere all around him. So we're just in such a, we've flopped into such a mud puddle of of sense gratification that we think if someone gets up in the morning and goes to Mongolia, oh, it's too much, fanatical. If you just do the most ordinary things, people think, oh, that's really too much. So where's the Krishna consciousness? I mean, what are we doing here anyway? We all know everyone comes through the prasadam, but you know, that's all after 25 years? I mean, you're supposed to come for the prasadam and stay for the prasadam and go on for some other things also. It's not only that. So, I mean, Prabhupada, he wrote these books, and, you know, he wasn't just his hobby. That, you know, he couldn't sleep at night, so he had some artistic feelings in him, so he was expressing his feelings, and he just wrote these books, that's all. So they're nice. They're nice books. They're nice to read them sometimes, in between Harry Potter and other things. So it's a classic work of art, Vedic classic. And Prabhupada, he was very serious, and he wanted us to be serious. And if we're at all to be in Krishna conscious, we have to be as serious as we can be with our already, I mean, we're already so much. I mean, Arjuna was afraid of Varnasankara being produced. At least the Varnasankara that would have been produced from women who had some background and culture. But we are Varnasankara of children of other Varnasankara, and you know, it's a whole parampara going back. You know, we're really, and in the modern age, it makes us. It's the culmination, the pinnacle or the dregs, whichever perspective. It's the whole society's upside down, so they think this is the pinnacle. That now we have free sex, and we even support the government supports the unmarried mothers. We're so advanced. We're encouraging them. And we have homosexual marriages among the priests. And we have the, last year, the parish priest came with his girlfriend. He came here. Huh? It wasn't his girlfriend? Sure looked like it. All right, we shouldn't say that. We have to be careful. He has to live here. I was in Zurich Airport. There was... anyway, I won't say. It's horrible. I'll tell you later if you like. It's just disgusting. So it's a highly degraded society. But the thing is that they just think, it's normal. It's all right. It's okay. So our devotees, if we create an atmosphere like that, then it also becomes normal. It's okay, everything's all right, but it's not at all. It's illicit sex is on the same level as meat-eating, gambling, intoxication. It's just that if in Vaishnava society becomes accepted, then we think it's normal. And even if anyone says it's wrong, what's wrong with you? Just like in Bangladesh, at least when I was first there, which is 27 years ago. At that time, of course, in the meantime, ISKCON's preaching has had its effect. But at that time, if you said to people, you find people playing mridanga, having kirtan, tilak, neck beads, guru, caste Goswami guru, and you know, very enthusiastic about kirtan, but they eat fish, and they just think it's normal. Even there was one initiated devotee I was saying to. That, you know, this fish eating, it's very... I said, well, what's wrong? He was initiated by Jayapacham. Said, what's wrong? Our guru in our village, he also eats fish. And all the other Vaishnavas, they're all Vaishnavas. They've been Vaishnavas longer than you. They're lifelong Vaishnavas. What do you know about Vaishnavism? They're all eating fish. So they create an atmosphere in which sinful activity is presented as quite normal and acceptable. And, you see, and even they're citing authority, you see, our guru is also eating fish. So this we can see it before our eyes. Practically, this similar kind of contamination is being created in our Vaishnav society today. That someone says, "Look, you know, it's divorce," and you should say, "Oh, it's normal." Doesn't it sound similar? It's normal, you see. Everyone's doing it, and you know, even Guru is doing it. So, and it becomes normal, and it becomes acceptable, and it's not considered a sinful activity and the whole society, the whole Vaishnava society becomes contaminated by thinking that something which is sinful is normal, because it is normal in the sense that so many people are doing it, but same thing is acceptable. So, that's why I chose to speak on this unpalatable subject. I don't actually like to speak about this. You might think I have some kind of fixation with it. Why is a sannyasi always talking about that? No. But then if we don't talk, then who's going to talk? And then it just becomes normal. And everything, you know. No one says anything. It goes on. Then it just becomes part of life. Oh, you're already married 10 years. Really? Oh. Surprised. Oh. You didn't get divorced yet? That people become surprised. Oh, really? You're married for the last 25 years, right? The same wife. Something unusual there. It is actually. People say it's unusual. People think, well, that's quite good. But so what to do now? The sense of duty. That sense of duty means that even in all difficulties, one pursues it. That's what duty means. In the modern age, we don't have any idea what duty is. This word, many words which were common previously, they've kind of got lost from the English language and probably from the Croatian. Words like duty. The word responsibility is still there. It's just like, you're paid to do a job and you have to take responsibility, so that's there. But duty is something. Duty is something deeper than responsibility. Responsibility may be something that you're paid, so you're responsible, you're left alone and you're responsible to do the job. But duty is something that you have to execute in all times, all places. It transcends payment. It's not... You can't be paid to perform your duty. It's something you have to perform out of principle. So the word duty, the word sin, that's another lost word. Due to the influence of Mayavad, there's no difference between sin and piety. There's no concept of sin. Due to Mayavad, they say, well, you can't really do anything wrong because everything is just wonderful and everything is love. And using the love, we just love everybody. But there's no meaning to it. There's no duty. It's just some kind of vague feeling. Duty is a more important word than love until we transcend the material attachments, and then the real love automatically is there. That's why probably he's emphasizing here in marriage, this love and beauty, these are not the considerate duty. Who thinks of such a thing? Even among our devotees, I find when I'm seeing in India, young men, devotees, they want to get married, one of the main, very important consideration is the girl has to be beautiful. So it's tough for the young girls who aren't beautiful, because by the laws of nature, maybe it's more in Kali Yuga, I don't know, but most people are not very beautiful. Most people are not candidates for becoming film stars or models. Most people, you know, their nose is too long or they're too fat or, you know, something. They just don't make it as models. So, you know, even the guys, fat, black and ugly, but they still want to, you know, they should marry Miss World. So, foolish, actually. But it's taken to be such an important thing. So there's, without that sense of duty, how to inculcate that sense of duty? That even if you don't like, you have to stick. You have to. Of course, one important thing is husband and wife, before marriage, there should be some kind of seeing that they're going to be able to live with each other. Astrological matching is important if you get a good astrologer. That's another problem. Getting a good astrologer. And then there should be a similar outlook on Krishna consciousness. For instance, if one wants to be very strict in practicing and the other significantly less so, then you're going to have problems. Prabhupada even mentioned in one purport that a devotee should marry a devotee boy should marry a devotee girl, and a demon should marry a demon, and then you'll be happy in marriage. Happy demons, happy marriage. If the husband is a demon, he should marry a demon. then they can have it. That's one thing, you see, even the demon, like Hiranyakashipu, I mean, he left his wife to do his austerities, but he never divorced her, or, you know, even the big demons, they looked after their wives and their children like this. So instilling that sense of duty, well, there should be discussions like this. These things should be discussed, and an atmosphere has to be created. Some husbands and wives, because of principles, they stick together. They're both strong. Yeah, we want to stay like this. And there are quite a few in this room here now. This makeshift room, is it really a room? Anyway. Yeah, it's a room of sorts. So there are quite a few present here now who have got that sense of duty in marriage. But then most people are weak, especially in the modern age. And without this kind of preaching, they don't really have any idea how we're supposed to live in family life. No one tells them anything. They just all of a sudden get married, and all of a sudden they're there. And they don't know what to do, or how to behave with their wife or their husband. And they see all around them devotees splitting up, getting divorced. No one says there's anything wrong with it, so they think, well, you know, having too many problems, well, I guess that's what I should do too. So an atmosphere has to be created. That's easier if we have our own communities to create such an atmosphere. That we're here with a purpose to serve Krishna, and in family life we're responsible, the wife to the husband, husband to the wife, and to the children, look after the children very nicely. But it's so fragile that even one person's misbehavior can shatter the whole atmosphere. In one country, there were householder community living in the country, and they went on for about 15 years, everyone going there. And one brahmachari who was living there, actually, he ran off with someone's wife, and the thing was never the same again. It's very, very difficult, it seems, in the modern age to create this kind of atmosphere. And then you say, well, why bother? Then why try? Well, we have to try. We're idealists. And certainly it can be done. I mean, if two generations ago our grandparents, they could live together like this, then why not? Then why can't we? But there have to be strict rules. No internet. And how we educate our children, all these things. A community, it's every aspect of life, the culture, every aspect of life is taken into consideration. And our culture is quite different from that of the modern world. We have to understand that the culture of the modern world is demoniac. It works against the real interest of the human being. As soon as we start to adopt the ideas of the Kami society in any way, we're in very, very severe trouble. It might seem like something innocuous, just like, you know, getting university degrees. Well, we go and study sociology or the history of religions, but you import the whole mindset. You bring, in most cases, unless one is very strongly fixed in Krishna conscious understanding, then you can't help but adopt, because you're associating with these people and you have to speak to them in their terms and write in their terms. And you have to write things like, Bhaktivedanta Swami was a charismatic guru who believed in the Hindu god. And you have to write like that. If you write as a Krishna conscious person should write, they'll fail you. So you have to write that Bhaktivedanta Swami, like Mahesh Yogi and Paramahamsa, following in the tradition of previous Indian holy men who had all kinds of garbage. So if you talk like this and write like this, and you know, for years to get your degree, and Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha, our desires become influenced by our association. And so that's just one example, and there are so many. If you say, well, what's the harm if the children watch a little TV here and there? But it's a lot of harm. That so much harm comes from that. And you see the program on TV, that how people behave with each other, how they interact with each other, and then we pick up their whole culture. This demoniac culture. First of all, we should understand the culture we're living in is demoniac. If we don't understand that, then there's no hope of us becoming non-demons. If we think the demoniac way of life is okay, then we're in trouble. So that's transmitted probably principally by the TV. We see that about, 7 or 8 years ago, some of my disciples in Gujarat, in India, they're on traveling Sankirtan in Rajasthan, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe 10 years ago. And at that time, there were just the electrification and TVization of the villages was going on. So they said that you can immediately, going to any, when we're traveling, we can immediately understand, as soon as we arrive in a place, whether or not the TVs come here or not. Just the way people react to you and how they behave, it's just so different. I'm not a great fan of conspiracy theories, but directly or indirectly, it seems that the media in India, the mass media, is deliberately trying to degrade the whole population. Because one devotee was telling me that they have like these soap operas, and they're always when they first started coming, before the culture of boyfriend and girlfriend came in India, they showed it was like normal to have boyfriends and girlfriends and marriages get divorced. Even before, and they introduced it wasn't there, but through the TV it got introduced, that they think it's normal nowadays, boyfriend, girlfriend and all this kind. I don't know if there's some conspiracy. It seems that it's easier to delude people into purchasing all the garbage they want to market. If their intelligence is so bewildered by sense gratification, then you can sell them anything. And I don't know exactly what's going on, but for sure the whole culture is very much degraded by TV. It could be used for good purposes, but even then, a better medium of communication is personal, rather than the whole family sit around a TV. Better they interact with each other. Or the elder members of the family tell stories from Ramayana. Or the village people all gather in the evening and listen to the local Brahmana tell stories from Shastra. It's a personal interaction, not this impersonal TV. Someone somewhere is broadcasting something. So maybe that's a major reason that our grandparents could stay together, because they used to go to the church, a family that prays together, stays together. And they believed in God, and they had it, even though it wasn't very, almost certainly wasn't preached to them as strongly as we're preaching now, because it didn't need to be. It's just there generationally. You don't have to talk about culture or any of these things. It's just there automatically that people behave in a certain way. The father behaves like this, the mother behaves like this. The mother doesn't try to be the father, and the father doesn't try to be the mother. And that's the way boys grow up as boys and girls grow up as girls. Whereas in the modern years, you see someone was telling me in Mayapur, some mother's bringing up her son as a girl, dresses her in girl's clothes and all, you know, just really weird. But that's, people are confused. They don't know whether they're boys or girls. Sometimes they switch back and forth this way. Totally bizarre. So creating an atmosphere, that's essential. That's largely up to the house. I mean, it's a joint effort, but the householders have to live their life in the house. So how they do it, associate with other householders who have such ideals. And we have to work on being Krishna conscious in householder life, however difficult that may seem. The impetus, to a large extent, has to come from the individual householders to hear and chant about Krishna at home. Because if you're not hearing and chanting about Krishna at home, if you're not having regular programs at home or attending the local temple's programs, then you're going to gossip or fight with each other or what are you doing? Well, let's turn on the TV. So there has to, without higher consciousness, we're doomed to fall into lower consciousness. There's no hope. There's only, in Kali Yuga, there's either Krishna consciousness or go to hell, that's all. There's not much in between. We're talking about pious family life, but it doesn't exist. Where is it? The ordinary piety isn't there. So unless you aim for something very high, you can't even come to like a normal level. So there has to be. And those who are preaching, what's all this strictness? I mean, they're actually enemies. They're enemies of themselves, and they're enemies of everyone else they come into contact with. Those who speak against being strict. They're just encouraging that. If we think that, you know, you just do whatever you like and chant Hare Krishna now and then, it doesn't work. One has to be serious. It's a war against Maya. And the wife and husband have to help each other in that. If they don't, then they'll be acting as each other's enemies. So it's up to the individual householders to make the determination that we have to be very serious in our household life. Again, that dilemma comes that people marry because they're, in most cases, people marry because they are weak. Even in the same Srimad Bhagavatam, it's spoken that the brahmachari, after being at the Gurukul, he may remain as a naishtik brahmachari, one who spends all his life simply pursuing higher values. Or he goes home. If he feels that he needs to fulfill material desires, then he should go home and get married. So it's already, married life is a concession for weakness in the first place. Now, of course, the brahmachari who spends 20 years in the Gurukul and goes home, the kind of sense gratification he's going to have would make our sannyasis look like gross sense gratifiers in comparison. I mean, the Vedic householder is very controlled and so he has so many rules to follow. And the sense gratification, the little sense gratification, I guess, the brahmana, he has such a life. He rises early and performs yajnas and They don't eat. The Brahmanas generally, they don't eat until about 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. They're so busy. They have so many things to do. They have to take bath, this ritual, then do yajnas. They have to serve the elders. They have to serve guests. They have so many duties to do. And their whole day, they have to, before they can eat, they have to study so much shastra. They have to recite so many things. So when it's talking about they can go home to fulfill their unfulfilled material desires, it doesn't mean they're going to go and, you know, go to the disco and have a huge TV in their home. It's we read it like that. Oh, really? I can go home and fulfill your material desires, but we have no idea how elevated. I mean, this is talking about karmakandiya people. They're not even talking about devotees. These are talking about people whose ultimate aim is to go to the heavenly planets. They're so self-controlled in householder life. So, devotees, they themselves have to make that decision that what are we here for in family life? If we're so weak that we're thinking that we can indulge in so much sense gratification and at the same time be Krishna conscious, we're not going to have a happy life. It's going to be miserable. Even such devotees can be helped if there's a broader community of the stronger devotees. But we have to be serious. That's all. The only hope, if we are to ourselves become Krishna conscious and actually preach to others about the importance of Krishna consciousness, then we have to be serious. There's an idea at the present time that, well, don't be too serious, otherwise people won't be able to relate to it. That we should, you know, kind of halfway, bridge preaching, go on the bridge and meet them, but then you just stay on the bridge forever. Then you're neither here nor there. Maybe better you just go and become a complete sense gratifier than purport to present Krishna consciousness in a diluted manner. Rather, instead of this idea, we should all be normal, we should be like the karmis. No, why? What do you want to be like that for? What did you come here for anyway? I mean, at least I came because I definitely didn't want to be like that. I had no idea what I wanted to be, but I knew for sure. When I was at school, I remember looking at all they saying you have to go to university. I looked at all the subjects. There was about 300 subjects, and I couldn't find even one that I wanted to study. and then I was just thinking, God, I don't want to be a normal person. It's horrible. And then I looked at all the abnormal people, you know, like, I mean, definitely I wouldn't have been allowed in the Hell's Angels anyway, but I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be a hippie, I didn't want to be a Hell's Angel, I didn't want to be a Jesus freak, and, you know, all the different things. I thought, maybe I'll just go and get a tent and live in Iceland, because there's no people there and they can't bother me. And then what am I going to do? I didn't know what to do. I knew definitely I don't want to be part of this world, but what to do? And one day I wandered into the Hare Krishna temple. This is it. The idea to be normal. Why? What am I? Normal? It's like you're living, it's like the people, they're in the madhouse and they get a job in the crazy house, and after some time they start thinking that, these people are, better be like them. So that's, but those who are taken to Krishna consciousness, they're taken to Krishna consciousness because if we think there's something to be had from this karmi society, it has anything of intrinsic value, then there's no way we can become Krishna conscious. Because Krishna consciousness begins from understanding that material life is not our life. It is a commitment to be different. Not in the way that, you know, people they, The punk rockers tried to be different, you know, by dyeing their hair and all kinds. But then there became thousands of them, and then they just became another group. So instead of just being different for this, and we're not being different for the sake of being different, but because we have found, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have found the real thing, which is the service to the lotus feet of Krishna. So if we're convinced of that, then there should be no question of having as our only priority of life to be Krishna conscious. And other things may be there, as long as we're living in this world, and there has to be some adjustment to it. But we should understand that whatever adjustment we have to material life, it's an adjustment for this. It's a policy for the sake of the situation we're in, but it's not our identity. Our identity is that we don't belong to, we don't have the same values, we're not part of this society. So we are different, yes, and that's just something you have to live with as a devotee. Householders, it's part of householder life that you want to be accepted by other people and part of the broader community, but we should know that if we're living in the community of non-devotees, then to be accepted by such people is a disaster. To be accepted on their terms by people who do not know what the goal of life is, that means we've spoiled our lives. So it requires difficulty. I mean, devotees have to take the difficulty of being different. And everyone will criticize. Why don't you allow your children to watch TV? Why are you teaching them all this Hindu stuff? You have to be prepared. If we are to have any hope of a better life for ourselves and our children and our grandchildren, then we have to make the commitment to stand out and be different. That's how America was founded. That people, they were convinced that they don't want, they were Christians who didn't want to be the same. They were serious about their Christianity, and they didn't want to be they didn't want the watered down versions they were getting at, they were persecuted in Europe, so they came to America, the land of the free, where they were free to practice Christianity in the more serious form, in the very serious form that they were practicing. They had they left their homes, their countries, and went to an unknown land because we have to practice like this. We're being persecuted. They were prepared to take the persecution for practicing, and we're not even prepared to take a little criticism. How weak we've become. Little criticism. Oh, really, okay. And we immediately, we forget all our vows and everything. So that commitment, we have to be strong. We may be weak, but then we have no hope, actually. We have to become strong. If we're weak, then we're finished. We have to be strong in our conviction. Yesterday, Balaram's appearance, we have to take strength from Balaram. Strength also comes from association. So associate with those devotees who are going in the right direction, have made the right commitment. That will help us. Read Prabhupada's books and believe them. Don't try to adjust them. That Prabhupada said this, but he didn't really mean it, or that was 20 years ago, and so many ways we can skillfully avoid Prabhupada. Not very intelligent. All right, Hare Krishna. There are so many things to be said about this. It's not the first time I've spoken on this subject. Many times. We have to. Otherwise, again, what's the hope? We have to try and build up this sense of commitment and responsibility. Yeah.
My question was based on a particular case I know. Can we encourage...
One thing. Do you have another mic, Devarshi?
Yes, we have.
You should have that ready for the questions. So we can all hear and it can get recorded also. Why won't they divorce? You know, it's like you're watching TV, you don't have any sadhana, and then why won't they divorce? It's inevitable, practically. You're in that atmosphere where it's considered normal. There's no higher principle, so it will come.
So my question is based on one particular case I know, and I would like to know, can we encourage some kind of a woman's vanaprastha when the situation in a family is not conducive to Krishna consciousness and the husband is maybe drug addict and it is like in late 40s or something like this? And I read something about that in Prabhupada is saying something in 4th canto in some purport.
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established Vishnu Priya Pali at the Yogpit, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, specifically for women whose household or situation was not favorable for their Krishna consciousness. He established that. But then after some time he found that it appears that it's very difficult because the women were all fighting among themselves. They came out from fighting in their homes to fighting with each other. So, but in principle, yeah. And that was going on for many years. It was just recently closed down. By the present management of the Chaitanya Math, they decided, enough of all this. But we see that Prabhupada's sister, who was from the same generation, she was a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, her father, that's Prabhupada's father, who Prabhupada said is a pure devotee, he married her into a fish-eating family. And she went along with that. She didn't protest it. She went on with her Krishna consciousness and cooking fish for her husband every day and his family. Extraordinary case. Well, maybe not. There are many such cases, actually. It's not extraordinary. For us, it sounds extraordinary. There's so many women who went on with their duties despite all difficulties. I mean, I know myself. I mean, one of my disciples, she's, you know, her family situation is terrible. But she's from an orthodox Brahmana family, and she's just going on with it. And somehow or other, she's chanting her rounds, but she's not going to give up, even though her husband, her parents, her husband's parents, they're very unreasonable people, you could say. They're not at all supportive to her Krishna consciousness, but she's committed to Krishna consciousness and she's committed to fulfilling her family duties even in the most unpleasant of circumstances. Well, her husband doesn't beat her. But verbal abuse and, I mean, so many things. So that was the norm, that if by chance you got into a difficult situation, you thought, well, all right, that's my lot. that's what's been allotted to me. All right, I have to go along with it. That's all. The parents have to see very carefully before marriage, and that's very important. But if by chance it's not such, it's a difficult situation, then still you have to go along with it. There was no divorce, so where was the question? There was no such thing. Yeah. This could turn into a long questions and answers session. Because there's so many different possibilities, but I think I'll finish now. Hare Krishna. There's a, what's that called, Mataji Sangha? What time is that today? 12 o'clock. So ladies can go to that and discuss from their angle how to be ideal.